the Public News Service Daily Newscast for Friday, March the 9th, 2018. I'm Mike Clifford. President Trump set to make history with a planned sit-down with a North Korean dictator. Also on our Friday rundown, tariffs put jobs on the line in trade-dependent states, and parents urged to speak up about alcohol. First, our top story, President Donald Trump has agreed to meet with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un for talks. The Washington Post calls it an extraordinary development following months of heightened nuclear tension, during which the two leaders exchanged frequent military threats and insults. The Post reports that Kim is committed to stopping nuclear and missile testing even during joint military drills in South Korea next month. Meantime, defying a good number of fellow Republicans, President Trump went ahead with a signing ceremony imposing new tariffs on aluminum and steel. That tariff announcement has raised fears of trade wars that could hurt the economy. Eric Tegenhoff reports on what's at stake in Washington state.
With as many as 40% of jobs in the Evergreen State dependent on foreign trade, worries abound that a backlash could come in the form of retaliatory tariffs on goods and products made here. Washington ranks first in exports per capita, and Boeing, one of the state's largest companies, sells 80% of its jets overseas. But Deborah Glassman with the Global Business Center at the University of Washington says it isn't only the aerospace industry that will feel the pain. Farmers rely on trade, too.
If you look at the large agricultural sector in eastern Washington, for example, most of those agricultural industries are dependent on trade. They export quite a lot.
On Thursday, Trump agreed to a more targeted approach, saying the tariffs wouldn't apply to Canada or Mexico for now. But his order placing a 25% tariff on steel imports and 10% on aluminum imports goes into effect in 2 weeks. The president says the tariffs will boost American workers and help rebuild the country's steel and aluminum industries.
Glassman says a trade war would hurt businesses of all sizes, as well as the state's ports, which depend both on imports and exports. Residents in Colorado won't be doubling up on tax cuts this year, that after the Colorado House failed to advance a bill on Thursday. More on the story from Eric Galatis.
The measure, following in the Trump administration's footsteps, would have lowered the state income tax rate from just over 4.6% to an even 4%. Carol Hedges with the Colorado Fiscal Institute thinks the legislative committee made a wise decision to stop digging a budget hole for the state.
Our communities are already struggling because our public investments aren't supporting schools, transportation, and higher education in ways they should. And by saying no to Bill 1203, at least we won't have a bigger problem to deal with.
The bill was co-sponsored by brothers Senator Tim Neville and Representative Patrick Neville, both Republicans representing Front Range communities. Proponents of trimming the tax rate point out that Colorado is projecting a budget surplus and argue that allowing workers to keep a bigger portion of their paychecks would boost the economy.
Legislators in Colorado are considering at least 13 other bills promising tax credits or deductions. Hedges warns that would decrease state revenue and make it harder to invest in housing, health care, higher education, and other public needs. Now to Nebraska, where state lawmakers will discuss legislation today that backers say could help students struggling with behavioral and mental health challenges. Mary Sherman explains.
Legislative Bill 998 would create a collaborative school behavioral and mental health fund and provide each of the state's 19 educational service units with a social worker for students in schools. Executive Director of the group Stand for Schools, Ann Hunter Pirtle, says growing poverty means more kids are coming to class with new challenges that some districts aren't equipped to handle. If not addressed, she explains, those behaviors can be a distraction or, at worst, a safety concern.
There's a lot of discussion in recent weeks about school safety, and a really clear place to start is someplace that nearly everyone can agree on, which is that students should get access to the mental and behavioral health services they need, regardless of where in the state they live.
Hunter Pirtle adds offering preventive care can address issues before they reach crisis stage. The bill outlines a plan to create the fund using private donations.
In a recent survey of Nebraska school administrators about student mental and behavioral health, 95% of those administrators said having people to provide services was a high or medium priority. And finally, Veronica Carter reports 5 months into a year-long campaign to reduce underage drinking in Illinois, advocates say headway is being made.
Know the No began in Illinois last November. It's the brainchild of a Tinley Park-based group called Leaders Opposed to Underage Drinking, or LOUD. The campaign is aimed at students and parents to dispel two myths. First, that most teens use alcohol. And second, that parents often facilitate it by looking the other way when their children drink because they might believe it's part of being young. Samantha Greenwald with the nonprofit community mental health agency Bremen Youth Services says many young people drink because of peer pressure, and often that continues into early adulthood.
Even though you are 18 and potentially seen as an adult, that does not mean your brain is fully developed, and that does not mean you don't continue to need guidance, especially when you're not in a school setting and trying to figure out your life.
The 2016 Illinois Youth Survey conducted by the Center for Prevention found 7 out of 10 students say no to alcohol despite the myth that underage drinking is common. Have a great weekend. I'm Mike Clifford for Public News Service, member and listener supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.